This is the Motion Martial Arts Podcast. In this episode, we discuss specialization in martial arts once again. Thanks for listening.
Hey, everybody.
Hey, guys. So we're going to revisit an old topic, which is specialization, which is something we talked about in our first ever episode.
Yeah, and it comes up a lot too. It's a really important concept, I guess, for the way that I view martial arts and the way that I do things, that, you know, kind of being aware of specialization and the positive and the negative effects from it, I think, is really important for people. So to give the long and the short of it, that, you know, I think that most martial arts have a tendency to specialize. Right, and you can look, just choose any random martial art.
Yeah.
You know, like Taekwondo, you guys, the kickers. You know, it's like, it's the art of kicking. That art is almost exclusively about kicking. Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu is all about the ground game, right? You know what I'm saying? There aren't other things, of course, but the specialization, the focus is very much on,
There's specialization even within those individual martial arts.
Of course,
some of the stuff we touched on in the first episode. So if you guys want to go back and listen to that first episode, I think that if you haven't listened to that episode, listening to that episode is kind of going to give you a little bit more foundation for what we're talking about here.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe you have listened to that episode, but, you know, go back and listen to it so you sort of see where we're coming from with some of this stuff. But to kind of pick up from the specialization thing, I think we had left the first episode talking about specialization as being that specialization is definitely a good thing and it's a good way to set up a foundation. But if you over specialize and get too deep into that wormhole, it can be actually dangerous.
Yep.
And detrimental to your overall growth. So I guess one of my thoughts and questions is, when is the time to start diversifying? Mm-hmm. When's the time to start opening up, you know, to yourself to, okay, I'm going to go start cross-training. I've done enough specialization that now is the opportunity for me to start adding from other things.
Mm-hmm.
Or even within your own martial art. So,
yeah,
like, I think the kicking thing in Taekwondo is a good example, because that's Taekwondo has, based off what you've told me and mm-hmm. my understanding, has gone heavily into the kicking thing, but it's not that there's not striking.
Sure.
So let's say you've gotten caught up in focusing mostly on the kicking thing. Well, when's the time to start to go, okay, well, now I'm going to start adding in more of punching or whatever. And for some people, I'm going to use judo as a great example, because there are people that have found a ton of success in judo mm-hmm. by, instead of being really, really high level with their takedowns, they're better at dragging it down to the ground and submitting people on the ground. Yeah. And they don't get a lot of ippon wins. So if that's your style, well, when do you start to go back and be like, okay, well, now I need to get my throws to a higher level?
Yeah.
And then there's also this idea of branching out to other martial arts. So, okay, I'm a striker, but I can't sprawl. I can't take anybody down. So when is a good time to transition into working on grappling?
No.
Because I am of the opinion, I think we share this opinion, if you make the transition too soon, it's going to hurt you.
Mm-hmm.
And if you make the transition too late, it's probably going to hurt you as well. But
yeah, well, it's hard, you know, it's hard to develop multiple skills at the same time. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's like, I think that's the positive specialization that we're talking about. There's something to be said for that. You know, you develop a particular skill to a very high level, and that's like your base right there. And then you add supplemental skills to, you know, to address some of your weaknesses, some of your deficiencies. Now, I think that the important thing to keep in mind with this, about like when is the right time, is that it always depends on what you want to get out of your training. You know, I kind of come to this, and in our first episodes was very much my perspective with it. I take it from a very much like a self-defense oriented approach. The idea being, you know, just myself is from a karate background, a striking background. The idea that I want to train with you and learn jiu-jitsu because I want some grappling experience, because I feel that will make me better, a better overall, you know, martial artist, and specifically better able to defend myself. Now, I acknowledge, though, there are a lot of people that that's not really something that's a priority for them. I mean, if you just, like, and use Taekwondo as an example, if you just love Taekwondo and you just want to be good at Taekwondo, you want to be a successful competitor and all that stuff, then yeah, you know, maybe it's not something that you really, maybe it's okay that you are hyper specialized, that the only thing that you really know how to do well is kicking and that's it. But just, I think it's important for people to, because these are, you know, this is the martial arts world, I think has changed, and people are a lot, because people are more connected with the internet, it's easier to see what other people are doing. I think people have become a lot more open with stuff like this. And I think it's just important, though, not to tell yourself that it's like Taekwondo is the ultimate martial art. If you're really, really good, you know, at kicking, then you don't need anything else because my kicks are so good that, you know, I'll be able to make them work in any situation. And so that's when you kind of start deluding yourself a little bit. It's just like, be like, no, I really like Taekwondo. I really like kicking. That's all that I'm concerned with. You know, I understand that this is going to make me not the best fighter in the world overall, but that's not what I'm doing. You know, I'm learning a specific art and that's all I want.
Yeah, well, I think you kind of hit the nail on the head when you said the what's the goal.
Yeah.
Because I think that's a huge part of it is if your goal is to be an Olympic level Taekwondo athlete, you really need to hyper specialize. But if that is not your goal, then being that hyper specialized doesn't matter. Same thing. Like if you want to be an Olympic wrestler, why are you going to waste your time working on submissions or throwing a punch or throwing a kick or a knee or an elbow? It's a waste of time.
That's a very important point.
You know, so like it's a waste of time simply in the fact that you are taking hours away from your goal.
Yeah, you don't make it to the highest level in the sport if you don't special. If your training is not geared 100% towards winning, that competition.
Obviously, the exception to that as far as martial sports would be MMA because MMA is kind of a combination of things. But all the other ones, you have to. Like, it doesn't make sense if you want to be the best boxer in the world to spend significant amount of times learning how to sprawl and stop a takedown. Yeah. You're literally wasting your hours away. And you're putting extra wear and tear on your body for something that doesn't benefit you for your ultimate goal. Now, the mass majority of people are not people that are going to make it into that hyper-specialized realm. Mm-hmm. And that's where the diversity can help and the cross training and making these decisions can help. Like, again, if you're going to be an MMA fighter, again, you're still playing the rules of the sport, but I am of the opinion, and I think you share this opinion with me, is that you need to hunker down, figure out your style first, and then you want to add to it. And,
you still see, of course, see specialization in MMA.
Across the board. Yeah. I mean, you actually look at most of the guys that make it to the high level stuff, they all have a foundation in something that they specialized in for the most part, and then they added to it. Now, there's always exceptions to the rule, but if we look at the bulk of the people, you're going to see, they spent a significant amount of time first focused on this one martial art, and then they started to add the other ones in.
Yep. Yeah. I mean, really super common thing. You get guys who are high-level strikers, you know, it's like they have like a blue belt in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, you know, because they have to learn at least enough that they're able to, you know, like they got a fighting chance with that kind of thing and they end up on the ground or they're able to prevent themselves from going to the ground. But yeah, I mean, MMA is a little bit of a different animal with that too, because I mean, it's in the name, you know, it's like there are multiple martial arts that are involved in that sport. But even so, I mean, there's still a fair amount of specialization that goes into that. Cause you know, I would say, and you know, this is one that we actually should really do a separate episode on the topic of multiple opponents. But you know, like that's the big thing with pretty much any sport, you know, versus self-defense, that even if you're doing MMA, which requires both striking and grappling skills, so therefore there's less specialization, you're still, you know, it's a one-on-one, you know, match with another trained martial artist. So it's, again, there are things that are just not going to be relevant at all to MMA that are going to be relevant for a lot of things that are involved in self-defense.
I actually think it's even easier than the multiple attacker thing is obviously a hot topic always, but it's simpler than that. Like, for example, you can't throw a 12-6 elbow, right?
Yeah.
You can't throw knees to a downed opponent.
Yep. Grind shots. Can't.
If my knees are on the ground and you knee me in the face, mm-hmm. you get disqualified.
Yeah, I always find that a weird rule.
but in real life, if you do something that makes me put my knees and hands on the ground and you knee me or soccer kick me in the face,
yeah,
that's going to cause significant damage.
Sure.
Same thing. If I end up on the ground somehow and you stomp me in the head, that's going to cause significant damage. Yeah. So there's a book that a friend of mine wrote, whose name is Eugene Robinson, called Fight, Everything You Ever Want to Know About Fighting. We've talked about this before.
I know. I really want to read that book. Just the title alone. Props to that guy. Great title.
There's a chapter in there where he talks to a doctor about what's the worst injuries he's ever seen from a fight. And he talks about a guy came in who was being stomped on his head and face while he was on the ground. He said that's the worst thing injuries he's ever seen.
It kills people.
Yeah, he says never stomp somebody on their head while they're on their ground unless your intention is to kill them or give them permanent brain damage, because there's a good chance those things are going to happen.
Yep.
Again, so there's a reason why that's not an MMA, but that can happen in real life. Sure. So in real life, if I get into a fight with somebody and I end up on the ground and my head's on the ground, they might stomp on my head.
Yeah. And you're not going to necessarily, the experience from MMA is not going to necessarily prepare you for that specific
kind of situation. So there's rules still. Now, again, I think big picture, kind of where I'm thinking more for this conversation, though, is that, and again, it's not the same for everyone, but assuming that you're not going to do a single martial art that you're planning to specialize in, so you're not going to be a professional high-level boxer, you're not going to be a Olympic level taekwondo athlete, you're not going to be a high level judo practitioner, you're not going to be a high level wrestler, you're not going to be a world champion Brazilian jiu-jitsu, again, it comes down to what's your motivation. So for some people, their motivation is literally, this is my physical activity for getting into shape.
Yep.
And maybe I like the sport a little bit. So for those people, I don't know if the idea of starting to explore cross training is really worth their time, because it might not bring them any joy. But for the rest of us, I think that there is a lot to be said about figuring out when to start expanding your palate and exploring other martial arts. And again, I think the answer is different for everybody on a timeline thing, because just like getting promoted to the next level and seeing improvements is a very personal thing. This is kind of a very personal thing as far as your timeline. But if your main focus is, hey, I want to have this, so if I ever get into a self-defense situation, I feel ready to go. And there can still also be other motivations, but if that's one of your main focuses, well, if you're a grappler, you need to learn striking at some point. If you're a striker, you need to learn grappling. Mm-hmm. So it goes both ways. When is that moment? I don't know 100%, but my personal thought is kind of like, you need to be competent first in one of those styles. You can't just have done it for a little bit. So, to me, it doesn't make sense personally. And I liken it to learning anything. It doesn't make sense if I want to learn how to play guitar to start guitar and bass at the same time.
Yeah.
Well, it doesn't make sense if I want to learn how to defend myself to start by throwing myself into striking and grappling at the same time. Mm-hmm. Because the learning process is so different on both of them. And I think you're going to get kind of confused. So I think
you're swamping yourself too. It's like one thing to remember about MMA fighters, they make it to a high level. I mean, they're professional athletes that are able. I've actually heard, I remember an interview with Michael Bisping where he talks about that. And I think he was, maybe talking a little bit of smack on other combat sports with being that, there's nothing like MMA, because there's so many things that we need to practice.
Yeah, yeah.
And keep sharp in our training. There's kickboxing, then there's also wrestling, then there's jiu-jitsu. It's like we need all of those things. They're things that we need to that we need to be doing in our training.
Michael Bisping is also one of the toughest dudes in the history of the world.
Sure, yeah. But he said it's not like being a boxer where it's like, you're kind of more limited in terms of the things that you need to practice. The MMA is a lot of stuff that you need to practice, and that's why I think it's common for those guys to be training, multiple training sessions a day.
So I don't know if you know this information. Yeah. I don't know people who listen. I'm going to assume some of you don't know this, but Michael Bisping was a world champion at 185 pounds, what's called the middleweight division at the UFC. Yeah. In the UFC, Years before that, Michael Bisping was, I believe it was in a fight with Vitor Belfort, who on the time was juiced to the gills on illegal steroids and other things. I believe hit him with like a front kick that did significant damage to his eye to the point that he had to, I don't know if they've removed part of the eye or he's blind in that eye. So he has a glass eye. I don't know the full story from that perspective.
My impression was he recently got the glass eye, but you know
he had significant
damage in that eye for years.
Yeah, he couldn't see. So like he was like literally he said something like it was like 20/2000 or something like that. Something crazy. Like he's legally blind. Yeah, he was blind. So this guy was fighting for pretty much like the last like something like 6 years of his career.
Yeah.
Without the ability to see out of one of his eyes, and won a world championship as a last second fill in against a guy named Luke Rockhold, who at the time Luke Rockhold was arguably one of the three best fighters, period, in the world possibly.
Yeah, he really stopped Rockhold in his tracks. Rockhold never recovered from that.
Yeah, there's other examples of Bisping. Bisping has not always been the world's best gentleman. He has some questionable things himself that he's done, but the guy was just tough as nails. But
And it's one of those things too with him that I think he was saying that he had to. I saw an interview with him talking about how he technically wasn't supposed to be fighting.
Yeah,
blind in one eye. Like they won't let you if you're blind in one eye and you want to be an MMA fighter, they'll tell you, you know, we can't.
Yeah, yeah. So he was like,
ring. But
he was cheating. He's talking.
He was able
about
to get past the medical.
Yeah, he's talking about it. He was like cheating the medical test somehow with the eye thing when they were doing the vision test. He should have failed it every time, but he figured out some way to cheat this.
It is damn impressive because I mean you don't have the depth perception. I feel like that has to make a huge difference, but specifically with you know the striking. And he was originally a kickboxer too. You know, it's like he was a good grappler, but I think that his striking was still his main thing. And that's damn impressive.
But yeah, getting back to the big picture. So obviously both of us have been around martial arts for a while. I personally think that the students that leave the fastest are the people that come in with no background and they're like, I'm going to do multiple martial arts at the same time. I think they're the ones that always flame out. And again, I love referencing music stuff. It's like same thing. Like it's hard if you want to like focus on playing like metal. Like it's hard to come in as a fresh player and be like, I'm going to learn how to play jazz style guitar, metal style guitar, and classical guitar all at the same time. You usually see that somebody kind of gravitates towards something. Mm-hmm. They kind of get good at that, and then they start to expand from there.
Sure.
It's just, to me, in my opinion, it's just too much.
It's a natural progression that you're describing there. The natural progression is that, you know, you establish a base, and generally with something that you take to well. You know, it's like, I just really like striking. You know, it's like, I like doing that, so that's what I'm going to concentrate on. But for me, I've been a martial artist for 20 years now. It's that, you know, like at some point, because I didn't have aspirations to be a super high-level athlete with anything, with the two, you know, like that wasn't something I was planning. I understand the people that is what they want to do with their practice.
Yeah.
They're in a different situation than I was. Started being like, you know, well, what do I really want to learn how to do now? And so I want to learn how to fill in some of the gaps in my skill set. Now, something I will say, this will be interesting because I wonder what your opinion would be on it, is that not all arts are equally specialized. There definitely are some that are more well-rounded than others. And there's something to be said. It's like the age-old question about at what point MMA becomes its own style.
I think that that's an interesting question because I actually think the gap between how specialized different arts are is a little overstated personally. Mm-hmm. But I think that it's that comes from the fact that I think it's a very American thing.
Mm-hmm.
To have everything fit into organized groupings and blocks.
Yeah.
It's like, it's very American. Like I love talking about this stuff. Again, I'm going to reference music again, and I'll reference movies and I'll reference martial arts right now and comic books maybe too a little bit. Like it's like, if you listen to the Rolling Stones and the Black Crowes and Aerosmith and Led Zeppelin, people are expecting you to dress a certain way and talk about those artists a certain way and only listen to those same artists. If you listen to metal, you're supposed to dress and carry yourself a certain way. Be a, like that. You see that a lot. Same thing. Like I see it a lot in jiu-jitsu. There's like this sort of weird thing where it's like almost like the jiu-jitsu fashion outside of what you wear on the mats is sometimes like, I don't even understand how it's a real thing, but it is a real thing.
Yeah, it's a subculture.
Yeah, exactly. You know, it's like, you see it with skateboarding. You see it like
this. Yeah, yeah.
So, like, the thing is that that's very much an American thing. And there's tons of people that obviously challenge those stereotypes. But you see lots of times if you're somebody challenging those stereotypes, you're almost ousted from the group.
Yeah.
So, I think that some of that has been... that martial arts are trying to specialize a little bit more because there has been more of a push for that. And I don't know where that push came from, because if you actually look at the initial waves of martial arts, there was a lot more. So there were like challenge matches and dojo storms and stuff like that. Sure. There was also a lot more like, hey, you are a karate school. Mm-hmm. You should add jiu-jitsu to to your school so you're more well-rounded.
Yeah.
Like, there used to be a lot more of that sort of stuff, where now it's almost like you still hear a little bit of, like, the jiu-jitsu and the karate schools getting together, but usually if it's a jiu-jitsu school, it's going to be coupled with a Muay Thai school.
Yeah.
And if you're a Muay Thai school... because
they're part of that MMA.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, like, karate is still, you know, generally... you know, very separate from the MMA world. Not that you don't, of course, have plenty of karate people to get into that, but it's not nearly as, you know, kind of like integral as it is in jiu-jitsu or Muay Thai.
So, like, the thing is, though, is that it's like every group decided that they wanted to separate more, which is, you would actually think that with all the information we have now, the opposite would be happening, and every group would
We talked about this in the first episode. Specialization is fun. You know, somebody, so for instance, you know, like I always say Taekwondo, but my style is Tung Sudo, which is very, very similar to Taekwondo. You know, Taekwondo is a big term, too. There's a lot of different ways Taekwondo is practiced. If you're talking about, like, the Olympic style, I would say, you know, that's, like as heavy as you can go on the specialization as possible. You know, with martial arts, pretty much, where it's just, like, there's... very, very limited punching you'll find in that style of Taekwondo. If you're talking about a big organization, it's called the ITF, International Taekwondo Federation. It's like the World Taekwondo Federation. That's the Olympic, you know, style, like Taekwondo. And then you have the ITF, which is a more like old school Taekwondo type stuff. That's very similar to what I've done my whole life, which is Tung Sudo, which is like old school Taekwondo. And so kicking is my specialty. It is the skill that I'm better at than anything else, for sure. And you know, my experience too, like I know what it's like to just take what you're already good at and then for years make it even better and even better and even better and even better. Like, you know, there is something that is fun about that process, about creating something that is very athletically, you know, like demanding. You know, it's a very high level, you know, thing that you're doing. But and I think these are the exact words I used in that first podcast. So like, even if you're a really, really good kicker, like, you know, like if that's all that you know how to do, there are huge holes in your overall game. And it's like, and you can't really fight. It's like, you can kick. It's not really the same thing as being able to fight. And I guess my whole point, I mean, actually one that really comes to mind with this, talking about the different levels of specialization within arts, is that, you know, like, let's talk about Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu versus Gracie Jiu-Jitsu. It's like, it's a very real thing we've talked about before, that in the Jiu-Jitsu world, you have, you know, kind of a lot of people that are very concentrated on the sport. So therefore, a lot of the standing skills that are traditionally taught in Jiu-Jitsu, right, are kind of going by the wayside because they're not as relevant to competition.
There's definitely something to be said about that.
Yeah.
But to me, I think the whole Gracie, people that call it Gracie Jiu-Jitsu versus Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, it's all just marketing or it's bitterness. So it's like the people that want to call it Gracie Jiu-Jitsu are doing it usually from a marketing perspective, so they can try and sell themselves to people as being something different. And the other people are doing it lots of times out of resentment because certain members of the Gracie family have made a crap ton of money off of Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu and calling it Gracie Jiu-Jitsu, mm-hmm. and they want to remove themselves for it from that, and or they're jealous of it, or mm-hmm. they're just kind of like, well, we want nothing to do with the Gracies, yeah. we want it to be our thing. But I actually think, so I agree with what you're saying, it can be very fun, but I actually think it's more about ego.
Yeah.
I really think it just comes down to ego. Like, I mean, I've been having lots of music conversations again recently.
Yeah.
During this whole coronavirus, COVID-19 lockdown yeah. thing. And one of the things that's been coming up a bunch, and it came up in that episode with my friend Brett,
yeah.
our podcast, is this idea that, like, I remember feeling very outcasted when I first started to play in bands and play in bands that were playing shows regularly in the kind of hardcore metal, punk rock, underground DIY scene.
Mm-hmm.
Being that I didn't really dress quite the part, and I stood out because most people are white, and I'm not white. So I felt very, very, like I didn't fit in. And as a result, there was all this music that I listened to that I was embarrassed about saying that I liked, because I was like, I'm already being outcasted and called a fake and a fraud. And it's not that I don't know all these bands that they're talking about for the most part, and I like a lot of these bands that they're talking about, but there's all this stuff that I like that has nothing to do with that. So yeah. then I kind of almost like kept it a secret. And then as I got over it, I sort of started realizing when I was talking to other musicians that I was friends with that, oh, everybody's listening to all this crazy diverse stuff when they're actual musicians.
Mm-hmm.
And like lots of times the thing that you maybe like the most isn't necessarily what's going to be the best thing for you to do.
Yeah.
So like the thing is that, you know, I think that the whole ego thing and the separation thing is really what's going on for the most part, big time, when we're talking about why these people are like Gracie Jiu-Jitsu versus Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, or I only want to do Tung Sudo, I only want to do boxing, I want to show boxing to be the superior art.
Mm-hmm.
It comes a lot down to like the ego of proving that what they do is best.
Mm-hmm.
And then it also comes down to having a fragile ego where you're like, what if I tell my students that what I do is not the most complete best thing in the world and you need something else?
Yeah.
Because then what if they go and try that other thing and they find out that that other thing is better? Yeah. What if they think that I'm being dishonest and I'm being fraudulent because I'm saying that this one thing is not enough to give them everything they need?
Sure.
So now maybe they think that, well, if you don't think it's the only thing you need, then how come it's what you do for a living?
Mm-hmm.
I think that those are two of the most motivating factors of why people are pushing specialization down other people's throats.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Well, it's one of those things where it's, you know, somebody, I think it's a very, very common experience among karate practitioners like myself, that, you know, getting into MMA and broadening my horizons and, you know, kind of learning more about the martial arts world at large rather than the karate world, you know, staying in the bubble of the, like,
yeah.
the karate world specifically. I mean, you do have to, it does take a little bit of humility. You do have to address, you know, the limitations of what you've invested years of your life in doing. You know, like you have to really address those limitations honestly. And that's not always an easy thing to do. You know, it's actually funny, and this might be a tiny bit off topic, but, you know, the whole coronavirus lockdown has made me appreciate a little bit. I posted a video on my Facebook page the other day. I was just talking about how it's very important to maintain a healthy lifestyle in stressful times. And
yeah.
You know, something I've gotten away from with my karate practice a little bit is the idea that this is for your health, just for your health. You know,
yeah.
like I think, and I'm not saying I don't. You know, I think that it is a mistake to go too far down that rabbit hole, that it's just like, oh, my martial art isn't really that effective, but it doesn't matter because I just do it for health anyway. It's a little bit like, well, come on. I mean, you know, there are a lot of things I can do for health. You know, it's like martial arts
yeah.
is supposed to produce combative ability. That's what makes them martial arts. But at the same time, this is what the video was about. I'm just like, everybody right now is going through some stressful times, you know, like, and you know, even if you're not out of work or financially hurting, I'm sure a lot of people are, but even if you're personally not, it's still just the anxiety about the uncertainness of the future here, about where exactly this is all going, is hard on everybody. And the way I always put it is something that helps me is I've been exercising every day. And it's helpful because this is a big part of what people will talk about with, you know, karate being, you know, like for your health and that kind of thing is that, and it's not only for karate or only for martial arts. I think it's true of any form of exercise, but it's something that's culturally, you know, like kind of a part of the martial arts culture. It's very strongly, you know, acknowledged in martial arts culture is that when you are fully engaged in your training and you're working hard, focusing on what you're doing, it pushes the rest of the world kind of into your peripheral.
Yeah.
Like that. You know, it's like you get a little bit of a break from the worry and the stress about, you know, like, oh my God, am I going to have a job when this is all over? And just for like, you know, like just maybe let's say you do like a 45 minute workout. Just for 45 minutes, you are focusing intently on what you're doing right now in this moment. And that's something that's beautiful about the martial arts. It's something that, you know, it's not that I didn't appreciate it before, but it's like a newfound appreciation that I've had through all of this for it. That like, yeah, okay, you know, it's like karate, that's something that karate, despite its limitations, the lack of grappling, I would say that you often have in karate, and that is a problem with producing overall combative ability. It does offer that to people. It's just, it teaches you maybe limited skills, but it makes you physically active, and it also, you know, gives you things to strive for and goals to reach and things that you can, you know, work hard and really delve into. So it's a healthy thing. I don't know exactly, I forget what set me off on that tangent. I know it's not exactly related to specialization.
I mean, I think everything ties in together though.
Oh, but, sure.
Again, going to the big picture of this conversation, I come back to this idea of competence being the motivation to start expanding.
Yeah.
So I think and competence doesn't mean mastery.
Sure.
And it doesn't mean that you have to be high level. I think you need to be competent in it. So whatever your martial art is, I think you need to be able to hold a dialogue in that martial art. And when I say dialogue, I don't mean verbally, but there can be a verbal aspect to it, but I mean the ability to exchange the foundation of the movements of that martial art with another person.
Yeah.
And be able to translate what is happening. And again, that's not always verbally. For some people that is verbally, some people it's a combination, but being able to be like, hey, I look at somebody throw that punch and I know that's not how you throw that punch.
Mm-hmm.
I have an understanding of that, and being like, you know, maybe you just adjust their arm or you adjust their hips,
mm-hmm.
and you know when you're throwing it off, like you're like, okay, that was a bad kick for this reason. This was a bad sprawl for this reason. Like, I think you need to have competence. So that is huge. And I think once you're competent in a martial art, whichever one you decide to make your first one, then I think it makes sense to start opening up and expanding where you want to go.
Yeah. Now, I think when you get to a certain level, it's like you get to a point where you can kind of maintain your ability fairly easily. You know what I mean? It's like, it's the point, I think that's what you're talking about. When you get to that point where you've obtained competence, you're good and you've been training for a long time, it's kind of like it's a part of you. It's ingrained in you. You're not just going to forget karate. Like, I practiced it for 20 years. You know, it's like, okay, you know, it's like you always have to keep up with your training. It's not that you stop entirely, but now I can start being like, okay, I'm going to spend 60% of my time doing jiu-jitsu because I really want to delve into that. And, you know, I want to learn how to do that art now too. And I'm just going to keep up with my karate training with the other 40%. Yeah. But I think I do agree. You got to get to a certain level.
And again, I think this is also important to remember, like who we're talking about right now when we're talking about this plan, it's for people that are kind of just the bulk of people who train martial arts, which is, it's a hobby for you. It's something that you do a few times a week.
Yeah.
Now, like, if this is your full-time job, well, that changes everything.
Sure.
You know, like, you have a responsibility to be constantly keeping your sword sharp in your specific martial art, you kind of have a responsibility to carry yourself with a certain level of health in mind, a certain level of morals that you should be holding yourself to and the people around you to. But you also have more time throughout the day because your job is based off improving yourself as a martial artist to kind of fill in the gaps here or there, because that's where you should be spending your 40 to 80 hours a week working on.
Yeah.
Now, if you have a full-time job and a family and other responsibilities, well, you might only be training 3 hours a week, maybe less, maybe more, whatever. This is really what I have in mind when I'm talking about when is the time to start to transition from specializing in one martial art to expanding and maybe doing something else. And I really think that's when you have competence in one. Because you only have so many hours in a day to invest in this. And if you truly want to get to a point where you're good at it, or whichever martial art you picked, or you want to have self-defense, I think you need to get the competence in one and then start to expand.
It's funny what you say about whatever martial art you pick, though, too, because I do also think that, and this is, you know, very present in my mind, again, to go back to the concept that the level of specialization is not equal across all martial arts. And a lot of the time, I think that a lot of time it's the sporting, you know, it's really the sport more than anything else, I think, creates the biggest specialization. You know, like boxing is another good example, similar to Olympic Taekwondo. You know, it's the art of punching.
Yeah.
And just punching, you know, but at the same time, then you also have Muay Thai, right? Where Muay Thai is like, it's kind of like as well-rounded as a martial art gets without any grappling or groundwork. You know, it's like they don't do that, but then, you know, like comparing boxing to Muay Thai is an interesting way of looking at it, that it's like, you know, you take top level Muay Thai fighters and put them in a boxing match, they're probably not going to do so well, right? Because they're only using one of their skill sets, when the reality is, you know, Muay Thai has kicking, punching, and then clinch work, knees, elbows, you know, all that stuff. So, and in Muay Thai, I'm sure that there's specializations within people. Like, you know, you got Muay Thai fighters that are particularly good kickers. That's their special skill. But they do everything else a little bit. I tend to be a little bit on the side of that you can't overwhelm people kind of too much. Like, I don't know if I'm sold entirely on the idea of MMA becoming a style in and of itself.
You know, I think you can.
I also kind of acknowledge that there are people that do that, that start training MMA from day one. So, I mean,
But I will say this. I think the ones that do have any level of success or competence in just starting with the MMA training, I'm going to go out on a bet and say that they already had high levels of athleticism or toughness.
It very much is athletic.
If they don't have those things, they do not find success by starting with MMA.
Yeah.
And even if you look at people like, I'm going to use John Jones as an example, because John Jones has an insane level of athleticism.
Yeah.
John Jones still grew up as a wrestler.
Mm-hmm.
He grew up wrestling. So he had a foundation in wrestling.
Oh, and his whole family too, professional athletes. Yeah. So, there's a very real genetic component.
So like the thing is though, is that's my point. So that's why he was able to close the gap on striking so quickly.
Yeah.
Is because he's a freak athlete and his base was wrestling. Yeah. So then by the time he comes to striking, he's like, oh, well, like if I, like the reality is that if John Jones was probably a better student, John Jones would have most likely been a Division I wrestler.
Yeah.
But John Jones, I don't want to get into the whole ethics of whether John Jones is a good or bad person, because I think John Jones' actions have shown us that he's not a good person. That's the thing, is that he did not prioritize, you know, being a good academic student, it seems like, and he still went and wrestled and won like a junior college championship.
Yeah.
But if he had better grades, he probably wouldn't have been a Division I guy. Mm-hmm. And he has two brothers that play in the NFL. If he had probably dedicated himself to football the way he dedicated himself to the fight stuff, and he was a little bigger, he probably would be playing in the NFL.
Yeah, he's an outlier. It's just a very clear way to put it. You know, you don't judge, you know, whether or not MMA is a style like other styles that, you know, can be taught to a large number of people, by judging people like John Jones.
That's kind of my point. It's people like him that are usually going to find the success in, hey, I can start MMA. But like the thing is that like John Jones is considered the bad athlete of his family because he's the one who couldn't make it in the to the NFL.
Sure.
Like there's an argument right now that his brother, who still plays in the NFL, might be the best defensive end in the NFL.
Wow.
Joe Rogan
was talking the other day too about John Jones. John Jones talking about just like messing around with his brothers, fighting a little bit, being that like they give him trouble.
Like they're massive compared to him. His one brother was, I believe, pretty much spent significant amount of times of his NFL career playing around 320 to 340 pounds.
Whew.
Which is,
wow.
John Jones competes at 205 pounds, which means he probably walks around 225. His other brother, I believe, walks around 280, 270, something like that.
So they're both significantly bigger
than him. So, like, that's the thing. Again, so you're going to have those outlier super freak athletes. But, like, that's the thing is, like, is John Jones really a martial artist, or is he a guy who is just an athlete who this sport just happened to be something he was in so naturally gifted at?
Man, that's a whole nother episode, are you really a martial artist just because you can fight?
Does that make you a martial artist? Is that happens in every other sport, so why wouldn't it happen in martial arts?
Yeah.
Because martial arts have a sporting aspect. So it's like, there's plenty of guys that are probably high-level boxers that if you ask them, like, I hate fighting, I hate boxing, I somehow just ended up
being good at this.
In a gym somehow. My parents forced me to do it. Or somebody looked at me and they were like, oh, I got into a street fight. And somebody's like, hey, if it came... And the next thing you know, I gave it a little try and it came easy. And the next thing you know, there are people, everybody around me, like,
make money with
this.
You're
going to be rich. Yeah. And then it happens. That stuff happens in every sport. So why wouldn't it happen in martial arts?
Sure. Yeah. Well, I mean, and just to give you another side of it, though, that MMA, a little bit of a different animal because it's a very high-level sport. And, you know, whether or not people can train in MMA from day one is questionable, to say the least. You know, I'd say I still don't have a firm kind of opinion on that, to tell you the truth. But at the same time, I know enough about karate history. It's a lot of what I'm trying to do. You know, the kind of thing, the teacher I want to be for my students is that karate used to be a lot less specialized, meaning that, you know, there was striking and grappling that was practiced. There's a famous quote from a very historically important karate teacher named Ken Wamabuni, and it was something, just to paraphrase it, to the effect of, you know, this is early 1900s in Japan. He was one of the karate instructors that went from Okinawa, where karate originated, and went to mainland Japan and started teaching it there, and that's how it spread across Japan and across, and eventually to the entire world. But he said that the karate that had been brought to Japan was really only a part of the art. That, you know, a lot of people think that throwing and joint locks are only found in judo and jiu-jitsu, and they're not found in karate. But he said that's just because they're not practicing the complete art. That, you know, that the idea that karate is only kicking and punching is something that's relatively recent development in the arts history. And I've talked about it on this podcast before. In my opinion, that's very much because judo was so prominent at that time in Japan. Karate guys kind of show up on the scene. It's like, well, what do they have to offer that people can't get other places? It's kicking and punching. You know, the judo and jiu-jitsu are already well established and there for people to practice, the people that want to learn the grappling skills. But it's my opinion that I think that, and I'm, you know, a lot of people in the karate world have recognized that there's a need to bring those grappling skills back to karate. Now, because they've kind of been lost over the generations, you know, it's like I'm going to Brazilian jiu-jitsu, you know, to learn some formal grappling. And of course, there's always Ian Abernethy too. You know, I've done a lot of training with him, and he does, in my opinion, some very practical, you know, like grappling skills, you know, for self-defense specifically, not as much for sport fighting. But the point is, I'm going to go to other arts to try to bring that grappling back. But it's still my belief, though, that, I mean, it's like this stuff was always, like, there always was a grappling element to karate.
I'm going to go back to what I said before, and just to wrap up this conversation, too. I think it comes back just to the ego thing.
Yeah.
I really do. And I think it comes back from people being very arrogant and pompous and having this desire to show that my little specialized thing is the best, and I want to make sure that it's different and that it's better. And then you have the other people that are so unconfident in what they're doing, and they can't handle having any dent to their ego, that they're like, I'm just going to stick to my bubble. And I think that's a large part of why there's so much separation. Like, again, simple things like, I mean, that peace out, which is a stomp to the knee that we do in jiu-jitsu, or like we do the kicks to the knee. There's like heel shots from the guard to people's kidneys. There's elbow stuff that gets worked on in jiu-jitsu. Most of that stuff got eliminated because people are like, well, we're not strikers. We're primarily grapplers, so we should be showing striking. But again, it's like, well, why not? Well, because the strikers can do it better. Yes, they can do it better. Mm-hmm. Nobody's arguing they can do it better or not. But there's still value in teaching people these moves.
Yeah.
No, it's important. And same thing on the flip side. Well, yeah, there's a better way to do that takedown, but that takedown still work. Well, why is it better when the judo practitioner shows you? Well, the judo version of the throw versus the karate version of the throw is the judo person is using more leverage and maybe timing. Mm-hmm. So it's going to take less athletic ability maybe to get the takedown. Where when you watch the karate person do it, you're like, oh, well, that'll still work, but it's going to take more strength. So if the person has this huge size advantage over you, it might not work as well as if you guys are the same size.
Yeah.
But they're still putting in the work and getting a foundation of at least a takedown.
Yeah.
And you know.
Yeah, that's why I say that art, you know, it's not that you shouldn't be well, like, you know, I think it's something that can be misunderstood about specialization is you do have specialization that's like, you know, Olympic Taekwondo or like boxing where it's like, we're really only going to do one skill right here. But then you also have specialization where, in my opinion, like the vision that I have where I want my karate to go, where the way that I'm teaching my students and the way that I'd like to, you know, better teach them in the future is that it's like, we have a specialization, which karate is kicking and punching. I come from a Korean style, so even heavy on kicking specifically. But we try to round out the skill set. Not trying to make, you know, my students world-class grapplers. You know, if grappling is something that they really like, you know, I think that karate may not be the martial art for them. You know, if that's what they decide that they want to really be good at, then, you know, karate probably is not the best way. But you should be learning some grappling just because you're doing a martial art that claims to be for self-defense. You know, it's like that. There has to be an element of it in there somewhere. So yeah, you know, I think that that's the best description of specialization I can come up with, you know.
Yeah, and I'm
positive specialization.
I'm sure we'll come back to this topic once again. There's just so many different things to talk about it.
Yep. But anyway, thanks for listening, everybody.
Yeah, take care. Hopefully everybody's holding up well during this COVID-19 sort of shutdown of all the martial arts schools, but hopefully we'll be back up and training soon. So
yeah, now more than ever, keep training, because you know it's like good. Everybody needs that stress reliever in their lives.
Yeah.
So, talk to you later, everybody.